IT transformation calls for true collaboration between cross-functional teams, from leaders to developers. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
Senate Intelligence Committee Vice Chairman Mark Warner says the security clearance backlog has reached an untenable point. He and his committee members are keeping an eye on that backlog and the Trump administration's plan to move the government-wide clearance portfolio from the Office of Personnel Management to the Pentagon. The Virginia senator tells Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco what he's watching for as the transfer gets off the ground.
You introduced a bill relatively recently that would close a loophole that some federal employees had been experiencing recently when they needed to relocate for work. And this impacts, you know, a pretty small group of people, but it seems as if the hardship that they had been experiencing was pretty vast. You know, what did you hear from your constituents about this, and what kinds of stories were you hearing from federal employees who maybe had to pay more than they expected to relocate for work?
Well, first of all, this is an area that I guess we shouldn't be surprised that the administration has not been responsive. The Trump administration's been horribly unfriendly to the federal workforce. They're usually the first place they look to go to try to cut in terms of trying to find savings for some of the other programs. We saw they failed to propose any significant pay increase. During the tax bill legislation, initially, this problem was going to be a complete disaster, whereby if a federal employee at the instigation of their management is moving from one location to another, any additional funds that would be given to that employee for cover moving expenses would have been taxed. Now, we got most of that fixed so that the moving expenses were plussed up a little bit to help cover the tax liability. But about 5 to 10% of our federal workforce, even if they're moving for their job, you usually get some stipend to help cover that move. But they were excluded. So I've got bipartisan legislation, Senator Kaine and I, Senator Collins, a series of other senators, to try to close this loophole. Because, if you want to continue in federal service and you want to move up the ladder or move for your career and you're getting transferred, and then it's going to end up costing you money to get to transfer, that's not a smart operating process, whether you're in the federal government or in the private sector. So we're trying to make sure there's not any discrimination against federal employees who do move for their job.
And your perception of, the uptake on that bill, do you feel pretty confident that that one's going to move forward?
I think this is one of the ones that, just in a common sense basis, and the fact that it's bipartisan, someone would have to have a pretty big antagonism towards our federal workforce if you went against this legislation, because this really just standardizes what also happens in the private sector as well now in the public sector. And most of this got literally to get fixed in the tax bill. The fact that this relatively small sliver, and again, estimates are around 5 to 10% of the federal workforce would be affected. We hope it'll get fixed, and whether it's passed through unanimous consent or attached to some other legislation, we're still trying to work through.
And you mentioned your perception of the administration's take on the federal workforce. I'm wondering if you've had a minute to look at the administration's government reorganization proposals. You know, there's a bit on security clearances in there. There's all kinds of different moves that the administration's been suggesting. Has that been on your radar? And if so, any initial thoughts on that?
Well, we've saw some fairly outrageous earlier proposals that seemed to be more talking points. They were going to, I think at one point, privatize, for example, the GW Parkway. They had a host of other efforts of dramatically restructuring the federal government. And I'm not opposed to the idea of streamlining our federal government operations. I did a lot of that when I was governor of Virginia, but not this administration, who seems to be more driven by ideological purposes than by business rationale. And again, appears that there's not been any incident where the Trump administration has not taken an opportunity to try to whack federal employees, whether it is the federal pay freeze, whether it's trying to cut retirement benefits for 2.6 million retirees and survivors, back some of the proposals in May. And we've seen already, again, in late May of this year, the president signed a number of executive orders that cut back on civil service productions. And these are civil service productions that have been earned over decades under both Democratic and Republican administrations. So I don't think it's a news flash to most of our federal workers that Mr. Trump's administration is not favorable. One area that I've not seen the president's proposals on security clearance reform. I do know at the Intelligence Committee level, we are gravely concerned by security clearance backlog. The numbers were up to 740,000. If you were a young college graduate and you wanted to join the CIA, young woman, young man might have to wait on average about 540 days to get a clearance. That's crazy. If you have a security clearance, for example, we found within the Department of Homeland Security and you move from one area of the department to another, your security clearance might be in abeyance for 100 days. We have huge problems with all of our contractors. The good news on this is at least the Trump appointees, Dan Coats, for example, has acknowledged this is an area that's not only in need of reform, but really it's just broken. And we've got a series of reforms, bipartisan reforms that are in our intelligence authorization bill, both the 18 and 19 fiscal year bills. We've rolled those together. We hope that will get across the finish line to get some of those reforms in. We got a smaller set of reforms into the NDAA. But at the bottom line, we've got to do a couple of things in security clearance reform. We've got to move from this, we're going to review you every 5 years regardless, to what's called continuous evaluation and prioritize which areas are going to be constantly evaluated and reviewed. We're going to have to bring technology to the security clearance process. In many ways, this process hasn't changed since the post-World War II era. We still have a lot of FBI retired agents going out and interviewing people, going out and looking at college transcripts. We need to do a much better job of using technology to be able to check arrest records, college transcripts, check that online rather than in-person visits. We need to be able to think about using Skype interviews in certain cases for personnel review in terms of character references. So there's a number of items here. They're not partisan. The good news is the committee, the Intelligence Committee, in a bipartisan way has made this a priority because the 740,000-person backlog means we're not getting quality people into the intelligence community at the rate we need. People in the private sector who are working on contracts, it's costing the taxpayer more money because contracts can't be started because of security clearance problems. And then we've got an era where, for example, a lot of our business community, I believe, needs to get at least temporary security clearances so that they can be briefed on subjects such as the enormous threat that Chinese industry is posing for American industry at this point. But we can't, we can make those comments, but if we can't give somebody a security clearance on a quick basis, then we're not going to be able to make the case as strongly as we need. So this is a true national security issue. And again, I want to commend Dan Coats, the DNI, for recognizing that. And I've been working with the deputy over there, Sue Gordon, and we've got a plan we're working through with our private sector and public sector partners to try to make this a reality.
And what's your perception of the Pentagon's handling on this issue? I mean, regardless of what happens with the Trump administration's proposal to move the entire security clearance government-wide portfolio from OPM to the Pentagon is taking a bigger responsibility in this issue. They're going to take over their own security clearances. And what's your handling on the plan that they've given you, their ability to use continuous evaluation and especially bring down that backlog of periodic reinvestigations?
Well, again, let's remember, we're now in an era, even from 4 or 5 years ago, well, security clearances take a lot longer and cost a lot more. That's crazy when we've got technology out there. And I understand, since the vast majority of individuals who are awaiting security clearance reforms are on the DOD side, frustration from Secretary Mattis and others to try to have DOD, particularly in terms of the clearance process itself, the security review itself, take over. I think they are saying the right things in terms of continuous evaluation and in terms of better use of technology. The thing I'm not going to be happy with is, in a sense, we're about 12,000 to 13,000 people who work in this security clearance era. They're not going to lose their jobs or change their jobs. It's just the box they report to was going to move from the OPM box side over to the DOD side. What would frustrate me a great deal is if this movement of oversight from OPM to DOD, if that process in itself somehow delayed the reforms that the ODNI and DOD have all agreed makes sense.
I want to swing back to a point that you made earlier when we were talking about the reorganization proposals. You mentioned the federal workforce, and you have a large number of constituents who are federal employees. But what has your message been as these executive orders have come out, as the retirement proposals have come out, to your colleagues who may not have as many federal employees in their constituencies? Obviously, they're not just in the D.C. area, but you do have, this is a personal issue for you.
Right. This is not only in the D.C. area. I think about all of the civilian DOD folks we've got down in Hampton Roads. We're blessed in Virginia to have the highest concentration of installations on the military side of any state in the country. And my message has been, you know, one, we've got your back. We're trying to not allow this administration to run roughshod over their rights, their benefits, as we talked about already in terms of the moving expenses. And we hear them on the challenge, both on the federal government side and on the contractor side, around the real problems around security clearances. So I think, you know, we've probably, the area I feel best about is the getting everybody on the same page on security clearance reform. And I think the government is, and particularly on the intel side, is moving pretty quickly. I think there'll be more teeth in our provisions if we can make sure we get the intel authorization bills passed, which have got strong security clearance. But I think, you know, you got to wake up every day being willing to fight for the workforce. And then what frustrates me so much is, you know, as somebody was a governor, somebody was an executive in business, you know, if you want your workforce to do more, and in this environment, we need them to do more oftentimes with less resources, one of the things you do is you try to build up that workforce, reinforce their value. You don't abjectly criticize them the way this administration has. And frankly, my Republican colleagues are, you know, first to blame the workforce rather than to acknowledge that they've got a tough job and we've got to actually stand by them. It just seems like it's bad management 101 in terms of management techniques. It's one of the reasons why, even though it's a small item, for example, later this week I'll be giving a speech on the floor celebrating great federal employees and the work they do. You know, it's why this week we're also putting a major resolution out in terms of Intelligence Professionals Day to recognize their good work. These are symbolic acts. I agree that most of the workforce would say, you know, maybe don't have a resolution as much as just give me a pay raise. But in today's environment, you know, I'd like to try to fight for both.
And what else are you watching for at the federal workforce?
You know, we're in an extraordinarily challenging time, and protecting our workforce is critically important. Trying to get security reform done in a meaningful way so that both on the contractor and on the public employee side, we can get people, particularly in areas that need security clearances, to have those clearances. Frankly, I think we have too many jobs that require clearances. I'd like to see some cutback in that area. And you know, we still have a host of areas where our workforce at all levels need to be part of the fight. And I think about that in the area of election security, because you know, as we're looking 15 weeks away from our 2018 elections, I don't feel as good as I'd like to feel about making sure that our systems are totally safe, that particularly some of the larger companies who have managed, matter of fact, three companies manage 90% of all of our voter files. We've got to make sure that there's not just Russian, but there's not other foreign intervention in those systems. Because when you've got a president that's this out there in terms of his comments undermining people's faith in our institutions, if you couple that then with foreign intervention, that's a recipe for disaster. And again, the folks who are going to help prevent that are what we can do with Congress, with rules and funding. But at the end of the day, it's government workers at every level, from state, local, and federal, that are going to have to do their job to make sure our systems are safe.
Virginia Democratic Senator Mark Warner speaking with Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco. Tomorrow in Part 2, Warner discusses his views on how the administration seems to be treating federal employees. Check out Nicole's story at federalnewsradio.com.